actually, I've been at BI and everything has changed. So I was new in the building. And after I left BI, I was at IQC for a while, and afterwards I was in Delft. Now I'm in Germany. And this specific talk is related to the work I've done with Yuli Nazarov in Delft in the Netherlands. So basically, this covers a large portion of what we have done in the last 3 years, perhaps, or 4 years. I'm going to talk about the entropy noise correspondence. It's a new type of correspondence. I'm going to talk about the mathematics and physics of this of a new formalism that leads to this. Entropy is a fundamental characteristic describing quantum many-body correlation between two parts of the system. And its measurement proved to be useful in quantum critical phenomena, quantum quenches into the topological order states, strongly correlated system, quantum heat engines, and also it determines the available resources for quantum computation. Measuring entropy in systems made of a large number of particles requires that we have the knowledge about the full elements of density matrix, which is pretty difficult for large systems. I mean, the systems that are being experimented in the lab. And what we did, we found the relation between entropy and noise. So basically, by the measurement of noise, we have the exact analog information to the entropy of the system. Well, basically, I'm talking about junctions in terms of we have a Hamiltonian that acts on two systems and it has two parts. And so I'm going to describe what the limitations and conditions of the systems are. But this is the general topic, and why we bother to do so. The information content of these flow, of the information flow, theoretically can help us to understand the flow of information, or how information is linked to physical quantities in quantum mechanics. The scope of possible informational applications in quantum devices, and also its uses in quantum resources to control information flow, and also to measure it, we need a kind of physical quantity. And by that, we need to stick to ideas such as Levitov and Klisch idea, for which basically is limited for charge system. Now we extended it for the energy transfers. And measuring entropy by noise is basically like measuring electric current with magnetic coil. So two different parameters help each other to get the information out of the partner. Now, how to measure entropy? The basic problem of the entropy is that it's a nonlinear function of density matrix, and therefore it's unphysical. I mean, in terms of being non-observable, it cannot be. So we need, for example, if you want to measure entropy for a probe environment, we need all elements of a large, I mean, infinitely or very large system. And so we need many repetitions of the measurement and precise reinitialization of the experiment in order to come up with the full elements. And the idea of Klisch and Levitov back in 2008 is basically based on a surprising entropy noise correspondence in charge system at the low temperature. So basically, if you have a kind of quantum point contact between two reservoirs that is like a stop sign for the charges to go from one lead to another, then we can measure the noise and all the statistics of the electric current in here. At the same time, if you calculate analytically the entropy flow from one lead to another via such a kind of one channel point contact, we come up with a correspondence between the two that I'm going to describe a little later what this means. And we extended that because not all systems in physics are charged. So most of the physical transfers in systems are based on energy transfer. And we also extended that to all temperatures. So it's a kind of early summary at the moment that we, if you have two systems, A and B, and they exchange some energies at some temperature, I mean, these two can be at any temperature, we found similar entropy noise correspondence. Let me go to the details of the problem a bit. So again, this the same problem that I described earlier. Entropy is a measure, it's nonlinear in density metrics, and its flow determines the information transfer from a system to another. And the early summary second now is that evaluating nonlinear measures such as entropy then, by taking the following steps gives rise to wrong results. And wrong here means inconsistency with the elements of quantum mechanics. And the steps are pretty reasonable. We find the density metrics from some time evolution equation, tracing out all the redundant subsystems, and we substitute the partial, the reduced density metric of the subsystem into the definition of the entropy, and we calculate the flow. So something like we find rho at each time, at each point, and then we plug the value or the metrics into the definition of entropy. So these steps it gives rise to incomplete evaluation of the entropy. And the problem is in the last step that we substitute density metrics because if we substitute that we are killing off some extended correlators. So if we consistently evaluate density metrics and nonlinear time evolution of density metrics, then we come up with another evaluation of the entropy. Nonlinearity allows for information exchanges via a new family of correlations. And this new family of correlations is completely missed in those steps. It somehow gets killed off in the last step of the previous slide. So the importance of these correlators is equal to the standard ones, the standards that are being evaluated in the time evolution of the partial density metrics. We face two questions. Basically, first is that how to evaluate the density metrics. We need something to be able to consistently evaluate it. And the second is that, is there any relation between the flow of information and physical quantities? So we found a new formalism here, and we found a correspondence to answer the second question. So how to evaluate it, how to, yeah.
I have a very elementary, a basic question. So is entropy conserved?
For the entire system, yes. But what we are talking about just a subsystem. So for
if
the
it's
subsystem.
Not conserved, then, I mean, it doesn't really make sense to talk about flow.
So the entropy, like the energy, can flow one from one system to another, like what the energy does. If you have two heat reservoirs, one at hot, one cold, then the energy can flow.
Right,
and we have the conservation of the energy for the entire system.
Right, but energy has, in a sense, has a local conservation. So not only that, the total energy for a closed system is conserved.
Yeah.
In a sense, they are also conserved locally.
Yeah.
So I was wondering whether there's a similar picture for energy.
Well, if you connect a small quantum system to a large heat bath, well, we can prove that it's approximately conserved. But of course, if the system is different, then we have to. I mean, yeah, I'm going to go to the details of what is conserved and what is not. But the system of our interest is the normal quantum devices being used in the lab, and they are in the small size. The heat reservoirs is in the large size, and therefore we can make some approximations for the conservation. How to evaluate it needs a new formalism. For example, the one that we propose, multiple parallel words. And it remains valid in all perturbation orders. How to measure it needs a new correspondence, entropy noise correspondence, limited to the second order. This is what we are stuck at, and we somehow are trying to get this limitation to the fourth order, but it turns out to be pretty difficult. I'm going to discuss about how to evaluate it. A simple example is that you consider a partial system, a subsystem of a large system, and the couplings between the quantum system and the heat bath or any electric reservoir or whatever is quite weak, such that the quantum system is perturbed around the equilibrium. So this value of the perturbation first order could be quite small. And if you evaluate ds by dt, you come up with terms like the d by dt of rho to the power 1, rho 1, the perturbed part of the density matrix. And now we have some higher orders of that, d rho squared by dt. And we have the many other. And evaluating this quantity needs simultaneous evolution of more than one world. So basically for this kind of quantity, we need two density matrices to be evolved together. And this brings us to the idea of Rene entropy. We can basically write down the original definition of the entropy in terms of d by dm of some quantity, which is called Rene entropy of degree m. It's simple to prove this relation, but the link between Rene entropy and Shannon entropy is basically the limit of m equal 1 after we take the partial derivative of the Rene entropy. So basically the original definition of the Rene entropy was in the classical statistics. You can have some states. If you take the probability of each state to power m can be any integer or non-integer number. And usually in physics, it's taken to be positive. Then this summation provides the entropy. And usually in some definitions, they say log of this quantity, but let's take this definition for this talk, because it doesn't really make change if you come up with the limitation of this partial derivative. So basically, if m is 1, it's just the unity relation, sum over p, all probabilities is 1. But we have to take the derivative with respect to m in order to come up with the non-trivial definition of the entropy. And it has many applications in multifractality, solids, generalization of reduced density metrics when it comes to quantum mechanics, and also it determines Shannon entropy in a way that is makes some consistency. And in quantum part, we take trace over of the density metrics to power m being the definition of the Rene entropy. And by parallel world, I don't have anything to do with the interpretation of quantum mechanics in multi-universe or whatever. I mean, this m is basically the number of copies here. That is what we call parallel world. And world means we have a closed system row, and therefore we call that closed system a world, but it could be replaced by replica also. So we have m number of replicas of the same system, but they are evolved at the same time. And the flow of the Rene entropy.
You said you have replicas, and they evolve at the same time, so they don't differ in any way. What do the replicas do?
Well, at the moment, so I have m number of the same world, and they may exchange some photons with one another. So it's going to come up in the next slide.
Okay.
So what they do is basically they provide some non-trivial addition to the entropy that has been neglected once we ignore this directly. So basically, what we do, we want to calculate d by dt of some power of density matrix. And we need a new formalism. We cannot follow Lindblad equation or any open quantum system strategy to come up with this evaluation. And why Rene entropy and not something else like sum over rho mn, rho nl, rho lm? We don't know why. I mean, the basic logic we had was that Rene entropy in the limit of m to 1 seems to be working well to obtain, for example, tunneling entropy that has, that I'm not going to describe that thing. But so there are some applications in the Rene entropy that these objects seems not to be working well. And we don't know why exactly. So it's a good question to really extend it into some other form of the quantities. So let us consider the evaluation of this quantity based on the perturbation theory. We have rho to be perturbed around some equilibrium value, rho naught. And this is the first order, d by dt of the same thing is written in terms of delta, first order, second order. And so first order of delta is basically the commutation of the interaction Hamiltonian and rho. Second order is basically a double commutation. And d rho to power m by dt is basically this series, d rho by dt rho to power m minus 1 up to the last point when this derivative that goes into the last term. Now, if we substitute these values here, we come up with the green and the red boxes. But the green box has the contribution of the second order perturbation theory on one world, and the rest of the worlds are in the equilibrium. So m minus 1 copies do not change in time, but only one copy changes or exchanges a photon or whatever particle. So we have this term, and now in the box we have the contribution of two first order terms. And m minus 2 copies are unchanged. And these provide new types of correlators that I'm going to describe. So once we calculate, once we substitute d rho by dt, I mean, you consider m is 1. If we substitute the Lindblad equation solution into the density matrix, we only have the contribution of this box. So all these terms are completely lost in the substitution. So diagrammatically, we can show the green box in this form. M minus 1 of the density matrices are unchanged in time, but one of them exchanges some particles with some environments. And this is the permutation of the derivative. Now in the a typical form, in the yellow box has the contribution of two first order time evolution, which basically means that, for example, for this, we have two worlds in the at equilibrium, n minus four at equilibrium at the end, and we have three worlds here. One of them takes time evolution. The one at the middle doesn't do anything. It's at the equilibrium, and the third one does another evolution. And some photon can be exchanged from here to there. And in the higher order, higher than the second order, we might have a pretty complex form of diagrams.
These systems are any kind of system? Or?
For the moment, yes. I mean, we are restricting ourselves to the validity of the perturbation theory. And the system is just a quantum system coupled to reservoir or some large environment.
And why photons?
Yeah. I mean, the photon is basically, because the motivation of the work was for the quantum heat engines. I'm talking about the photon, but it could be anything. I mean, so if charge is exchanged, for example, between the system, it's not photon, it's electron. If some gauge particles can be exchanged from one.
And you want these diagrams to give you the same value as those terms in yellow boxes?
Say again.
You have these diagrams and they correspond to the mathematical expression in the yellow box.
Yes.
So you want that to be the case?
Yes.
And you'll show that physically it's possible that to be the case?
Yes. I'm going to show that even if we take the number of copies to one, then something is left over from whatever we have in the yellow box. It doesn't go to zero in the limit of m equal one. A better way of describing the diagram is the Kaldish formalism. It's basically Bra and Kate are evolving along a timeline. So Bra state goes backwards in time and Kate goes forward. And this is the initial density matrix at the beginning of time when the interaction Hamiltonian is turned off. So these crosses introduce the interaction, and you can have some interaction acting on the Bra, some on the Ket, and you have to integral over all of these to come up with different correlators that may happen in the time evolution. If you have two quantum systems interacting with one another, system A, system B, and the Hamiltonian of interaction is HAB. For example, a lead in here, and another lead there, and a nanostructure in between, like a quantum channel, or some few number of degrees of freedom are being shared between A and B. Then, so you have some conserved quantities beyond the physical the normal physical quantities that so these conserved quantities have no physical no physical analog, but they are being conserved, and there are some measures in the information theory, like the trace of rho a to power 2 or b squared or whatever. So these are conserved quantities if the interaction is small and the leads are large. And we can show the Kaldish diagram for interacting subsystems like A and B by two contours. Blue represent the evolution of subsystem B, red of the subsystem A. And the crosses, again, are the interaction between the two. Now we extended this Feynman-Vernon Keldysh diagram into parallel words. If we have, for example, three copies of the same system, and we are interested to calculate a quantity like Rene entropy of degree 3 of a subsystem like A, then we have to take first trace of, maybe I should use this sticker. So we have to take the trace of the global density matrix over system B and take the entire thing to the power 3 and take the trace over A. And this can be represented in the form of system B is blue line, so they are all traced over internally at each world because of this parenthesis. And then we have three copies of that. Therefore, the trace over system A should take place after we encompass all the world. And if we place the interaction Hamiltonian at different worlds, there is a possibility that we have one interaction in here and another interaction takes place somewhere else. And it basically means that a particle is exchanged or the state is changed for the quantum system in here, and then the change the state goes all the way down and comes up to the second place where the state again, the particle gets absorbed and the state goes back on the original value. So these are like the extended form of the of the same diagram, and the logic I describe why we introduce this new form of diagrams. So basically, for the green box, we have nothing more than everything can be done within inside one world because n minus one of the copies are completely unchanged. We have, for example, two interactions acting on the system in one copy of the world, and the rest of them are at equilibrium. But if you have terms like this, then this can be represented in the Keldysh contour as being one interaction here in one copy, the second interaction in another copy. And this is the origin of the new correlators. And if we are interested to come up with d rho to power m by dt, we have to evaluate single world terms plus all other non-trivial terms. And we have quite a large number of them. You have to take care of all terms and sum them up. For a specific system, we did so. And we realized that we need to extend the notion of correlation. The standard correlation is basically defined, for example, if the contour that encompasses all the copies of the world is described by B, we have two systems, A and B, and the edge interaction is basically in this form, and we trace over A internally at each red contour, then the trace over B takes place over the black contour. And for the case when the interaction takes place in one world, we don't need to really take care of the rest of them. In the second order, we require to have a quantity like this, B at some time, B at another time, rho of that subsystem, and we trace over that. And this guy, when the reservoir is at equilibrium, has something in common with the dynamical susceptibility of the system. So basically, we shake the reservoir with a quantum system, and the dynamical susceptibility of the quantum system, of the reservoir, that written here by this tilde chi is proportional to the correlators, the standard correlators. This relation is called Kubo-Martin-Schwinger, or basically it's a form of fluctuation dissipation theory. And if we generalize it for the cases when the interaction takes place at different copies, then we need to calculate quantities like this. B at some time, for example, T minus 1, T minus tau, and n copies of the density matrix in between until it gets, I mean, the particle is absorbed or the energy transfer is absorbed again. So we have the second B at another time, and the rest of the world are at the end. And if we evaluate this quantity, this new correlator or generalized correlator, it turns out that there is still at equilibrium limit a relation between this quantity and the dynamical susceptibility subject to new terms that has something to do with this n. This n should be capital. Basically, this is the same number of the walls that come in between, or these are the number of the walls that are being sandwiched between the two interactions. So we have this exponential term, and also the frequency or the temperature of the heat bath is rescaled. So this equation is for the specific form of temperature dependent. I mean, it's the systems when the susceptibility is temperature independent. But if we have temperature dependency in the susceptibility, we have to rescale that quantity as well. If you like, you can rename this parallel world a quantum replica trick. But you have to consider the differences. So it's not quite that. In replica trick, the replicas do not define new measure. While in parallel worlds, we define a standard information measure called Rene entropy that is known as a measure in quantum information theory. We can have some variation around the Rene entropy. We can have, for example, conditional Rene entropy that has something to do with the free energy of the system and so on. The second difference is in most applications, the replicas do not bear any dynamics. We do not define any dynamics for the replica. It's just the different copies of the same system.
You can use the trick to measure Rene entropies, and that's
been
done both numerically and experimentally.
Well, I'm not. Who has done this?
There was an old trick for direct measurement of entanglement quantum information theory years ago. This was independently rediscovered by Roger Melko and collaborators, and they demonstrated it in quantum Monte Carlo, and that's been picked up by a bunch of people. Mm-hmm. And it's also been done experimentally by, for example, Reginald Islam in this group.
Well, I'm not familiar with that topic, but I'm assuming that perhaps there is no real dynamics in the system. It's just the
experimental system. It's a thing, right? It's evolving.
Yeah. Well, then I have to look at to see. I mean, it could be the same subject. It could be the same strategy. I'm not familiar with. But the replicas do not give a sense of simultaneous evolution. This is what we found in the literature. And the most importantly, the usual use of replicas involve the averaging over a static random potential, where we don't have such kind of random potential in the parallel world. We do the real replica evolution in time. And there are some more detailed reasons, but I'm happy to look at the paper you mentioned also.
I don't really understand the distinction. What is the So there's worse than different things. So parallel world is where you have copies that talk to each other. And,
yes.
And the replica.
So in the replica, we have the and again some copies of the same system, but they do. I mean, it's just the statistical copies. We don't evolve them. I mean, we couldn't find any paper doing the exact real-time evolution of each copy.
In both cases, you have multiple copies of the same state.
The common thing is that we have the multiple copies of the same.
What is the difference?
The difference is in the way how we evolve it in the real time. So in the replica part, the time evolution is not existed for the density metric associated to each world. But what we do, we exactly evolve each world once we allow them to simultaneously talk to each other and exchange some particles and so on. So it's a kind of exact time evolution of the entire system. Let me show you some examples. For example, you can assume that we have system A, B, and some interacting system in between, and we have the driving Hamiltonian that acts on the quantum degrees of freedom. And you can assume that A and B are heat baths, and they're being made by creation and annihilation operators. And there are an infinite number of modes in it, and the number of particles also is infinite. The driving Hamiltonian is down there, and the qubit Hamiltonian is basically, it could be for two-level system, it's E0 and E1, it's a two-dimensional matrix. And the interaction takes place between the qubit in here, the qubit state, and the operator X in the heat bath, in one of the heat bath. And we can have the summation over this interaction to take care of all the heat bath. So we need to evaluate, for example, for this specific system, the correlators. Now the correlators are the heat bath operators at different times, 0 and T. And the extended form of it is basically comes next. But now, the time evolution of the quantum system is described by Lindblad equation. These are standard things. These are not what we did. We have the residual Hamiltonian, the dissipation terms in the time evolution of the density matrix. But now we want to evaluate this quantity, and we need these extended correlators. And so here is an example how we do it. We, for example, have X acting on the quantum system and takes the state of the quantum system from M to N, and a particle is exchanged here, and the system that gets into this this copy where state P changes to Q, and if we trace over all contours, then we are sure that Q should be equivalent to M, because M goes back on to the state Q. They could not be they should not have any difference. The correlators in time is defined as X rho to power N, basically N number of the worlds are between the two interactions. And again, another X at different time, and the rest of the copies. So we have X at MN in here. We have N number of the heat reservoir density matrix at equilibrium, for example. And the second X acting on system and the heat reservoir at a different time, it could be plus or minus. And the rest of the world, so this quantity can be written if the integral is taken from 0 to infinite. It's written as a half of the correlators and some residue. So we can define this correlator basically by extending the domain of the integral from minus infinity to infinite. The same quantity, now we substitute the exact value of density matrix in here. We know that is a large diagonal matrix for the heat reservoir. E to power minus beta En, and there are n copies of it. So there is basically a multiplication between these two, divided by z to power n. So we have the same thing in here, and if we evaluate this thing, we come up with the exact evaluation of the quantity of interest, which was this guy. The result is that the flow of the Rene entropy has something to do with the parameters n, frequencies, and temperature. For us, it's not important. And the rest of the terms are the difference of two terms. So let me talk about the prefactor a bit. The prefactor, the ratio of the Rene entropy divided by the Shannon entropy versus M can be plotted in this way. This is plotted for different frequencies divided by T, basically here. At different values of that quantity, and we of course did it for integer number of the worlds, so we cannot have like half a world or some non-integer value. But so we did it for this red or for this black dots, but we assume that nothing exotic happens between these dots, and we can have the analytical continuation of the prefactor. So we don't have much information here to discuss, but what is important here is the difference of two quantities. The first quantity is what we get from the second law of thermodynamics. It's basically the density matrix susceptibility, some Bose function, and so on. The second is new, and it comes out from evaluation of the entropy from by using the new formalism, and it has rho squared in it, which is quite new. And if we take the limit of this quantity and evaluate the flow of the Shannon entropy, it has nothing to do with this number of the worlds and so on. M is one. Then we get the first part minus QC divided by temperature. So basically, if we follow up with the second law of thermodynamics, we naturally get this QI part, the heat exchange, I mean, the heat dissipation between the two systems via exchanging some photons. But now we are seeing that the photon can be absorbed and emitted in two different copies of the world. And why we have two? Because this study is limited to second order perturbation theory. If we go to the higher order, we expect to get four, six, and other even numbers, even functions of density matrix. We calculated this thing for two-level system between two heat reservoirs, and we found that, so here we have exchange of heat bath. The physical exchanges take place between heat bath and the quantum system, and also at the same time we have some information flow. What we measure by the entropy, we measure this quantity, and so we, you know, from the physics, from quantum transport, how to measure the energy, charge, and spin flow between them. Here I showed temperature left, temperature right, but it could be, for example, for the electronic system, it could be chemical potential. And you see that we have non-vanishing contribution of these new terms. Since the system is driven by external force, we have a stationary rho 0, 1, for example, the off-diagonal elements, and the it turns out that the result is quite but different from what we get if we restrict ourselves to only first order correlations. Now I'm going to talk about how to measure the entropy. The second question, is there any relation between information and physical quantities? the exact correspondences between seemingly different concepts are known, are very important in physics. Basically, we know that there are a lot of the correspondences in physics, for example, fluctuation dissipation theorem, that in one side we have the linear response of a system to externally applied force, and on the other side we have system fluctuation, and these two are linked to one another. We can measure, for example, the susceptibility of the system by the fluctuation. For the entropy noise correspondence in charge system made by Levitov and Klisch, provides a link between entanglement entropy in a charge system, for example, in a quantum point contact, and the full counting statistics of a charge transfer, of charge transfer between the two leads in the quantum point contact. We generalize this correspondence to the case where we have the energy exchanges between two systems. And more precisely, that there is the correspondence between Rene entropy flows and full counting statistics of the energy transfer, now rescaled at a different temperature. The original idea comes from, as I said, Levitov and Klisch. We have a quantum point contact being closed at some time and open between two time intervals and closed again. And the charge can be transferred from one side to another. The idea is that if you find out the probability of a transfer from one side to another and multiply that to some phase and sum over all states, you come up with a generating function. That generating function can be written in terms of the cumulants, the fluctuations of the system. Now, the surprising relation is between information and physics, that if you come up with the calculation of the entropy, you see that there's a link between entropy and this cumulants, which was not trivial at all. So once you have this cumulants in the lab, if you have the standard deviation, mean values, and so on experimented in the lab, you just need these prefactors and this summation to come up with the entropy measurement. And these numbers, these factors are some known numbers related to Bernoulli, for example, numbers Bn, and in the odd mode, we don't have any contribution. The validity of what I stated in the previous slide is in the zero temperature and interactions occurring by means of charge transfer. The generalization needs all temperature and the interaction by means of energy transfer. And we do the similar thing for the energy transfer, the probability of the energy transfer from one side to another at time interval t is this guy, and we multiply it by a phase. We determine the generating function, and we can get the cumulants by taking the derivative from the generating function. For example, the mean value of the energy transferred is written by the first derivative of that generating function. What I showed you have been worked out by Nazarov in 2004, 5, 6, in around that time, and also by Levitov separately. And now what we did, we found, we tried to calculate the full counting statistics for two systems that are exchanging energies, in the quantum form, the standard formalism is basically, again, a kind of modified Keldysh formalism. So we have to consider a pseudo-density matrix evolving by two unitary at time, but the unitary operators are H plus and H minus H plus. If we have two systems interacting and we are interested to get the reduced state of, let's say, system A, then we have to time shift this part of the operator by some parameters and take the second part intact, and we find the trace over this quantity to come up with a generating function. This provides the generating function of the energy transfer in quantum system. So basically, in diagrams, you can show that the first interaction takes place here. We have A being now shifted by some quantity in time, and B at the same time t. And again, another interaction takes place a little bit before. And you have to evaluate this quantity to get R, take the trace out. The second situation is where the second interaction takes place in the keta state. When we have the interaction at the keta state, then this time shift moves the operator a little bit forward instead of backward. We have plus and minus. But we find in here. But at the end of the story, this lambda is just non-physical quantity, and we have to take it to zero. But we take it to zero at the end of the story. We take the trace, and then we take that to zero. We have to evaluate all these four quantities in the second order and take the trace, and then this quantity is the generating function. And so we know that this generating function provides the information of all cumulants in the statistics. And for example, for the system of our interest, if we evaluate all these diagrams, it is summarized in this form. So we have the correlators and also some function that can be written in terms of these decorrelators. We call this part, for example, the incoherent energy transfer between two systems. And there is a link. If we compare this result with the Rene entropy result, just by looking at the two, we see some similarities. For example, this guy has something to do with M in the Rene part. And so if we substitute this lambda with I beta M minus 1, it becomes pretty similar to Rene entropy. Still something is missing. And that thing is a second full counting statistic is required that was completely non-trivial to us. Once we replace this B operator with the average value of it, with some kind of classical. We call this part the coherent energy transfer because it has something to do with the externally driven forces. And then we come up with the exact correspondence between full counting statistics of the energy transfer and the Rene entropy. And that has this form. We have the Rene entropy flow in one side, and we have the statistics in the other side. So you can compare the multiple parallel world picture provides exactly the same thing in the statistics diagram. This remains valid in the limit of m equal 1. So the correspondence is what I've written here. A special case is the flow of the Shannon entropy that shows to be related to the difference of these two statistics. Now they are at the same temperature as the system of interest in the Rene. In the information sector, you should notice that once we want to evaluate the Rene entropy for a system at temperature T, for a probe environment at temperature T, it's equivalent to evaluating the statistics of the same structure at a different temperature, T divided by M. And also there are some links between the characteristic parameter lambda in the statistics part and M in the Rene part. So this relation basically shows that it's similar to measuring electric current, for example. You can assume that this is like the information part, left part, with the magnetic coil. If you want to measure this quantity, you can measure these quantities in the lab and come up with a solution. We can repeat the same examples using now with not the exact evaluation on diagrams. Instead, we do the evaluation via the statistics. And we come up with the same evaluation, the same plot. And also with and another example is where we replace this two-level system with a harmonic oscillator. It turns out that the result is pretty interesting. And we can have the situation, but depending on the temperature of the harmonic oscillator, we can have situation of the reversal information flow that we're going to discuss perhaps later in future publications. And for systems that are being applied in photovoltaic cells, in biocells, in photosynthesis, and so on, that we have two reservoirs and four-level system. They are coupled by some externally driven forces. Then we can evaluate the flow of the information from one side to another. And for this specific example, I think I got the hot temperature, hot reservoir to be the probe environment where we do the measurement. So these two lines are the result of the second law of thermodynamics, and the third line is basically that QC terms that cannot be absorbed, it cannot be caught by the second law of thermodynamics. We have the off-diagonal element of density matrix squared in it that cannot be understood there. The summary, a large body of information flow is missing in the literature. Basically, it goes back to the yellow boxes I showed you. The huge amount of correlators are missing once we have the photon exchanges between different copies. We introduce a formalism to consistently evaluate them. It's valid in weak coupling regime. It's valid for any time depending yet stationary external drive. And we don't need to have the periodic cosine or sine external forces. And we introduce a correspondence that makes entropy flow physically accessible. But the problem with the third line is that we are limited to the second order perturbation theory. If you go to the fourth order, we cannot say that this is valid. At the moment, we don't have any simple form like the one that I showed you in the earlier slides to connect physics and information. The open problems, there are many, because it's a new formalism, we have many information measures that are nonlinear, for example, fidelity loss, for example, the quantum discord or whatever. I mean, there are too many quantities or measures in quantum information whose time evolution can be subject of research. We can evaluate, I mean, but those quantities can be evaluated with this formalism, and extending the formalism to devices working on a strong coupling is pretty interesting, because it's where the physical devices come to test this formalism. We have to have a new formalism, basically not this one, to come up with a strong coupling. I mean, but going beyond the second order is like nightmare for these diagrams. We can also extend it to curve the space-time, studying second law in black holes. We can also do some application to control information flow to come up with the elevated quantum heat engine efficiency, or to understand the decoherence in multi-qubit system. So there are a large body of literature that can be now understood by taking this new formalism and also applying the correspondences. And yet, yeah, I need some help from students to join my group. I need a PhD student and a postdoc. And by that, I thank all.
Questions?
Oh, yes. What you call a coherent flow.
Oh, okay.
is it purely a quantum effect, or do you also have it if you think about some classical systems? Because whatever you have then, it's
yeah,
very
yeah,
quantum
I understand
level
that.
Systems and
yeah.
so
Well, the coherency, because, I mean, we had some reasons to call that part coherent, and that is, if you remember, that has something to do with the averaging over one part of the system, which is like the external driving, I mean, the exchange of the energy via the external drive. So it has something to do with the classicality of the system in that sense, but it cannot get absorbed from taking the second law, because it basically relies on the off-diagonal elements of density machines.
So it's
that
very
in the coherent part. Yes. So it's kind of confusing for us that it has something to do in one side with the classicality of the system, because we are doing the classical, we are applying classical force on the system to get it driven. But on the other side, we see this effect only in the off-diagonal elements that are stationary, if you have it. Similar thing can be taken care of when we have, for example, double degeneracy in a quantum system. So it's the same concept. We don't need external force, but the system is double degenerate quantum mechanically, and therefore we have the off-diagonal elements of density matrix there, and this new term also exists. So that's why we are kind of not sure how to call these new terms. This is like.
So this is just reminding me, what's the connection with the work on the quantum heat engine work of Scully and Dorfman and whatnot at Texas A&M? You know about that, right?
Well, the last model I showed
the
you.
The four-level thing. Was
yeah, the four-level is exactly Scully's model for the quantum heat engine. But now what we do, we just calculate the flow of the information. What they are interested in is to evaluate some physical, like the statistics of the energy transfer, or how the efficiency of the system in the physical part would. But now we were interested in the second law of thermodynamics, how d by dt of the entropy
those
would.
Are related, though? I mean, they're interested in energy extraction, and you're looking at the change in entropy. So those two things should be connected, right?
They are connected, but not exactly through the second law of thermodynamics. We have a second term that is not existed in the second law. I mean, if we take care of, so let me put it in that way. If we just get the second law of thermodynamics and we have the full counting statistics of the energy transfer, we mix these two together, we are not getting the full evaluation of the entropy flow. Because then nothing in the right side takes care of these new correlators. So we need a second part, this QC part, that takes care of the new correlators, and then it may change the evaluation of the entropy. So it's not exactly what we get from the second part.
Can you imagine a situation where the classical second law is violated with you would construct a different second law so that you include the coherent term.
Uh-huh.
That's the point, right?
Yeah, I mean,
the one increases and one is stationary, the one decreases and one is...
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a kind of violation in the sense that we have the existence of something that we don't understand what that is. And that second term cannot be caught semi-classically by taking the discreteness even of the energy levels. We have to have the full dynamics of all copies to find out what's going on. And this may also enter not only in the quantum thermodynamics, but in some other measures, like the way how in a quantum computer, how qubits talk to each other in the course of time. I mean, sometimes the initial the coherence of the multi-qubit is weak at the beginning, but then it gets larger and larger when the system processes. in time. So there is no exact way to understand why this happens. Everything is just semi-classically valid. And now this model, if we assume that we have these worlds are different copies of the qubits, then it may help to understand how this new type of growing in the decoherence may take place. So that's one thing that goes beyond the quantum thermodynamics. And so, yeah.
So I have one more short question. See, while this Renoir trick may be convenient for interpretation and so on, is it possible to extract, for example, presence of this coherent flow that you're talking by some other physical argument without this trick? Because if it is there,
yeah,
there should be some physical way of understanding the coherent flow, what you call as coherent flow.
That's a good question, actually. So since we had the evaluation at the beginning, we had to bring it into the correspondence, like artificially, to understand how these two may match with one another. But is there any other independent way to understand the coherent flow? That's a good question. Actually, I'm not really sure what that could be. Yes.
Questions, next call again.